So, Greg Wyshynski, I'm very glad to be talking to you today because I have to admit that my preparation for this NHL season has mostly just been humming the NHL ESPN theme song on repeat to myself as I walk through my neighborhood. It's so good. It's Pavlovian for you, I imagine, too.
Yeah, because I'm a Gen Xer and I grew up watching The Deuce and watching Buchegrass on NHL Tonight. Because the thing about the NHL's return to ESPN that I didn't anticipate until it happened was this incredible groundswell of nostalgic joy that bubbled up in hockey fans. Hockey fans yes. are like, this feels right. I also didn't anticipate how exciting it would be for me to have so many new friends. Mm. Like, all of a sudden, the people that I'm working with on a daily basis have expanded exponentially. And I have to tell you, I was speaking with my new coworker, Mark Messier, the other day.
Oh, here we go. I was going to say, when is VIP Wyshynski going to show up to this podcast?
And we were having a laugh because when we all sat down in Chicago for this big all hands on deck, let's meet the NHL crew meeting, you know, there's all of these presentations from us and from the league and the whole thing. And I said to Messier, I'm like, I couldn't help but notice that you and Chris Chelios were just sitting in the back of the room like the two cool kids in class. And he's like, well, you're the cool kids in class. And I'm not going to disagree with Mark Messier.
Yes, the NHL is finally returning to ESPN tonight after 16 long years apart, which means that we now turn to our in-house expert, Greg Wyshynski, to catch you up on everything you need to know before pucks drop about the two-time champion Lightning, the newly released Seattle Kraken, and Ovechkin and Crosby and the one-time cool kids who have since aged into grizzled, possibly record-setting vets. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, October 12th. This is ESPN Daily. So I know this season is going to be different in all sorts of ways, ESPN's involvement being prominent among them. But just catch us up here, Greg, on how normal it'll feel relative to the last year and the year before.
Yeah, it's going to look a lot like what the NHL looked like pre-pandemic season. The divisions have all been aligned back to the way they were in the 2019-20 season, save for one difference, which is the arrival of the Seattle Kraken, the expansion team in the Pacific Division. The playoff format returns to the wild card format they've had since 2014. And one of the things that's going to be exciting is the return to full capacity crowds. At the moment, there's only one building in the NHL that isn't going to be allowed to open at full capacity on opening night, which is the Vancouver Canucks Arena because of local COVID protocol regulations. But the NHL is certainly expecting a much sunnier revenue picture this year than they did last year when some teams played in front of empty buildings.
Yeah, and just the Canadian dynamic here. I mean, are there travel restrictions still this season because of local protocols, or no? Is that sort of behind us at this point?
Well, the travel restrictions come into play with the differences between vaccinated and unvaccinated players in the National Hockey League. Now, the NHL tells us that they expect around 99% of their players to be vaccinated when the season starts, which is an incredible number. There was no vaccine mandate from the NHL and the NHLPA, but it's safe to say that it was strongly suggested through the differences mm-hmm. in protocols for those who are unvaccinated to get vaccinated. Unlike the NBA, the NHL did not seek a national interest exemption from Canada, which allows unvaccinated players, say, to go to Canada and play the Raptors. If you're unvaccinated and you're on an American NHL team, you still have to go through the quarantine period when you go to Canada, which basically means you can't play in Canada. The protocols for the NHL and the NHLPA are very stringent, and they allow teams to suspend players without pay that cannot fulfill their hockey duties. Part of your hockey duty is playing games in Canada, so I think you could read the writing on the wall there.
But the season does open in America, Greg. It opens with the back-to-back champion Tampa Bay Lightning starting their title defense by welcoming the Pittsburgh Penguins to Tampa. And look, I know the NHL hasn't had a three-peat since the New York Islanders won four straight cups in the 80s, but are the Lightning still just the obvious team to beat this season? How likely is a third straight championship?
Super obviously the team to beat, less obvious if they can win the cup for a third straight season. The thing that makes you think that we might see a three-peat is the core of this team. It's so good. And they're all back for the most part. Nikita Kucherov, Andrei Vasilevskiy, Victor Hedman, Braden Point, Steven Stamkos, Alex Killorn, Ryan McDonough. These are all names that we've seen on this roster for the last two seasons that have all contributed mightily to them winning two straight Stanley Cups. They're all back. Another reason I kind of like the idea of them being on track for a potential three-peat is, keep in mind, this team hasn't played a full 82-game season in either of the trips they've taken to the Stanley Cup final. You had the pandemic-shortened season in 2019 and 2020, and then you had the 56-game season they played last season in 2021. So they might have a little less wear and tear on them than other dynastic teams have. But the one thing that's keeping me back from picking them to win a third straight Stanley Cup is the explosion of their checking line. So three guys made up this line. Barkley Goodrow, awesome hockey name. Blake Coleman.
Really good hockey name, yes.
And Yanni Gourde. They were able to play against the other team's top lines and not only shut them down defensively, but contribute big goals offensively throughout the journey to the Cup victories. Goodrow signed with the Rangers. Coleman signed with the Calgary Flames. Yanni Gourde ended up getting taken in the expansion draft by the Seattle Kraken. They've got to find a way to recreate a little bit of the magic that that checking line gave them. And if they can't, it's going to be a big, big difference between this Lightning team and the two previous championship teams.
Well, I want to ask you also about another player that I kind of fell in love with in, I think it was a press conference, to be honest, Greg, in Nikita Kucherov. Like, that dude going shirtless, being covered in beer after they win their second straight Stanley Cup. You know, him mocking media members about their Zoom connectivity.
What's it like to be able to celebrate with guys that you've grown up with?
What did he say? Buy a new mic. Microphone.
I mean, he was not around in the regular season, right? Like, but now he will be. What's his situation now?
Yeah, he missed the entire regular season after off-season surgery. He comes back in game one of the playoffs, very, very convenient timing, and marauds the playoffs. Like, he's incredible during the playoffs. And then, like you said, afterwards, decided to have a shirtless, somewhat inebriated press conference.
Somewhat is a generous evaluation from you, Greg.
I mean, Pablo, I didn't put a breathalyzer on the guy. I don't want to be judgy, but, you know. And the great part about it is that he ends up getting some endorsement deals with beer companies because he's swilling beer while he's doing his post-cup press conference. And for me as a hockey fan, one of the more exciting things is to see him play another full 82-game season. I mean, this is a guy who put up a ridiculous point total in the last full season he played and walked away with MVP honors.
So in terms of who can challenge Tampa Bay in the East, Greg, this year, I mean, the team they're going to play tonight, the Penguins, I mean, look, I know that is a team to be reckoned with here. I know Sidney Crosby is getting older. I mean, he's 34. That's old in sports parlance. But the idea that the window is closing, Greg, for the Penguins and for Crosby, how do you evaluate that team?
Well, like you said, the nickname Sid the Kid becoming more ironic by the year as they pass
by. Yeah,
now feeling a little
sarcastic, maybe.
Exactly. Now, the Penguins are an interesting case because Sidney Crosby is expected back early on in the season. Evgeny Malkin, their other big star player, is going to be on the shelf for a few months to start the season. Now, normally, for another team, having one of your biggest star players not being able to play would be kind of a problem. But the Penguins have a real knack over the years for excelling despite having key players out to injury. Their time as a Stanley Cup contender, I think, is probably over. But their time as a playoff berth contender, I think they're very much still in it. I would not be shocked if we saw Sidney Crosby get MVP consideration. The MVP voters love to give it to somebody that they appreciate as a player who also like helps lift their team into a playoff spot if they're unexpected to be there.
So the Seattle Kraken, you know, the other team that you mentioned, the other team that's going to be the second half of this doubleheader tonight, basically, they open up against the Vegas Golden Knights. And this is a matchup that is intriguing because it feels like the Knights are the model for what the Kraken want to be, right?
Having talked to Kraken head coach Dave Hakstol during the offseason, I can tell you that the Vegas model is mostly annoying to the Kraken. Like, the expectations set on this team straight out the gate because the previous expansion team made the Stanley Cup final, those are enormous expectations. They're different processes. I'll tell you that. You know, Vegas was able to take advantage of the expansion draft and get a lot of picks and get a lot of prospects and some quality players from the other teams in the league based on the pressures exerted by the way the expansion draft was set up. Seattle apparently didn't have the same luxury. Their GM, Ron Francis, told me, hey, these teams figured out how to kind of maneuver around the expansion draft based on their experiences in the Vegas draft. So we didn't have the opportunity to leverage them in the same way. So Seattle went about it a little bit different, where they spent more time looking at big name, unrestricted free agents, some of whom they drafted in the expansion draft, some of whom they just signed away.
It's like your neighbor's kid ends up being good at everything. Like, your neighbor's kid ends up acing every test, and now your parents expect you to do the same thing. But also, the teachers have, like, made the tests harder now.
Exactly. It is going to be interesting to see where the Kraken end up in the Seattle sports pecking order.
There has to be, like, a Squid Game reference at some point. I feel like the Seattle Kraken just, like, hitting on the matrix of cultural relevancy right now. They're in a good spot.
Well, I mean, we'll settle for Liam Neeson showing up as his character from Clash of the Titans to say, release the Kraken.
Oh, my,
and
that
Pablo,
has to happen. That
Pablo, I'm pretty sure he's available for the right price.
All right, Greg, after the break, and before Liam Neeson shows up in my house to show me his very particular set of skills, I need you to break down what we're going to see from some of the biggest names in the NHL.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, Greg, this is where I need to ask you about Alex Ovechkin, because the star of the Washington Capitals, he is very, very focused on this pursuit of the career goals record that is obviously owned by Wayne Gretzky, but Ovechkin is also 36 years old now. He is in year one also of a five-year deal. He is 164 goals behind the great one, and he is dealing with this lower body injury that he just suffered in the preseason finale against the Flyers, meaning he's banged up to start the year. So what are his chances of catching Gretzky and breaking the record?
They're realistic, although, you know, getting longer because of the time that he's missed, not necessarily to injury. And I mean, the saying around Washington is Russian machine never breaks, and hopefully that continues on into his late 30s. But also because of the time he's lost to schedule interruptions. We tallied it up for an article I wrote about Ovechkin's Gretzky chase. It cost him about 100 goals off his total. All the games that he lost through the pandemic and through work stoppages. But as far as where the chase is as we enter the season, if Alex Ovechkin maintains his career average of 0.6 goals per game, he would need 271 games to score another 165 goals and overtake Gretzky. So with that pace, he would break Wayne Gretzky's career goals record during the 2024-25 season, which would be the fourth year of his new contract. I asked Ovechkin about the goal chase, and he's a guy that wants to kind of play it down. He said to me, you know, he understands how big the moment's going to be, not only in the National Hockey League in North America, but back home in Russia, where one of Russia's favorite sons rises up and breaks the Canadian gold standards record, right, for career goals. But I remember Ovechkin at one point kind of pushed his hands down as if he's trying to, like, tell everybody to calm down, and he says, but let's just wait. Let's just wait. So I think he's excited, but trying to tamper those expectations.
Yeah, wait, so just for people who don't appreciate, you know, the significance of this record, obviously it is the record. It's goals scored. I mean, that's obvious. But, like, if he breaks this, what does this say about Ovechkin in a real way, Greg?
Well, it's an interesting question, because I think the fact he's gotten this close says more about Ovechkin than if he actually breaks the record. And the reason I say this is I was talking to his first line mate, Jeff Halpern of the Washington Capitals. He said to me, you know, Gretzky set the record in the 1980s. It was a different style of play. As the years have gone on, we've seen defensive systems get better. We've seen goaltending get exponentially better, both in the quality of goaltenders, the quality of goaltending equipment, and the quality of goaltending coaching and training. So Ovechkin getting this close in this era, although there have been some rules changes that are a bit advantageous, such as more power plays, where he obviously scores a ton of goals, I think is a testament to how great he is. For my money, he's the best goal scorer of all time, even though he hasn't broken the record yet.
Okay, so if Ovechkin is the best goal scorer of all time, according to you, Greg, what is the superlative you'd use for Connor McDavid? Obviously, he won the Hart Trophy, he's a league MVP, but for those who don't understand what's going on with McDavid and where he's headed next in his career, how would you describe that?
I would describe Connor McDavid as playing at a different speed than the rest of the league. And I mean that in the way he skates, but I mostly mean that in the way he's able to create offense at that high velocity in a way that people who have watched hockey for a very, very, very long time, longer than I've been alive, tell me they've never seen anybody do before.
McDavid moving in, dropped it back, Dreisaitl, hat-trick goal!
Behind the back, through the legs, right to Dreisaitl. I thought this was going to handcuff him. I didn't think he was going to pick this up. But was I ever wrong? It's right there, and bang, into the back of the net.
And that's his greatest gift. Mm. The word posterized doesn't get thrown around the NHL all that often, but Connor McDavid posterizes defensemen like once a week.
Nurse, McDavid spins, Matt fell down to the net, wrist shot, score!
Once he has a step on you, he's going to take a mile, and he leaves Scheifele in the dust here with this little spinorama.
And that's what McDavid does. He has the unique ability to break down defensemen in ways that we've just never seen anybody do on a regular basis. And with results, too. I mean, you know, the point production from Connor McDavid has been incredible. You could make the argument he should be an MVP every season with what he contributes to the Oilers. He is just a remarkable player. I mean, for those who haven't seen him, if you want to see somebody who, like we've seen in other sports, just seems to be playing a different game than everybody else, like that's your Connor McDavid in the NHL right now.
Okay, so I want to move you to another guy who I am told is worth the price of admission, even more than that, obviously, in Austin Matthews, Greg. And I know this is the superstar of the Toronto Maple Leafs. I understand that he led the league in goals last year. I understand that he somehow wound up being this good despite growing up in Scottsdale, Arizona. And that is just climatologically very confusing to me. So how good is he really?
Well, I mean, you got to skate fast before the ice melts, right? So, I mean, that's a really, really good carrot in front of him. It's an important point about where we are in the National Hockey League these days, which is we are at a point where the seeds have been planted through 25 years of expansion, where it is no longer super odd that a player comes from Arizona, that a player comes from Texas, that a player comes from California or Florida. As far as his gameplay goes, the best proxy is Mario Lemieux. Like, he is a big center that can score goals at will, create plays at will, and do it effortlessly.
Matthews, nice move. Backhand shot, he scores. A spectacular goal. Second of the game for Matthews.
You know, those were the comparisons that he got when he was a younger player. The rate of scoring that he has, while obviously not at Mario's godlike levels, I think is commiserate with the type of production you'd expect from somebody who has that skill set. So he's a fantastic player. He really is a special one.
So the existentialism of having to skate before the ice melts, a good metaphor for planet Earth, a good metaphor maybe too, Greg, for like the desperation of the Maple Leafs at this point, right? I mean, again, we've talked about this before, but they have not won this thing since 1967. Last year, it felt like that might have been the year. Obviously, it was not. What is the temperature check right now in Toronto?
Oh, it's hot. It is a steamy. We just talked about the Arizona desert. It's like that. It's like Death Valley. I mean, it is very hot right now. They haven't won since 67, but they also haven't won a playoff round since 2004. I mean, that is where we are with this franchise right now. So the pressure is on, and GM Kyle Dubas has acknowledged as much that the pressure is on him, where if this team doesn't win a playoff round, it could spell the end of his tenure. And the pressure is also on what is referred to as the core four in Toronto. That'd be Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, a great young forward as well, William Nylander, another great young forward, and Morgan Rielly, a great young defenseman. Rielly is in the last year of his contract, so there could be some changes there. But the idea that they're on the precipice of either graduating to true Stanley Cup contender status by finding playoff success, or looking at major changes within the organization because they haven't had that success. I mean, I think the Leafs are right there this season.
All right, Greg, after the break, we got to dig into the other drama that's happening around the NHL.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, Greg, I need you to help me understand what's happening with the Buffalo Sabres, because I know that former captain Jack Eichel and his dispute about his surgery that he should or shouldn't have gotten for his neck injury that has sort of roiled both the league office and the NHLPA, the players' union. It's the kind of story that's brought in Vegas goalie Robin Lehner, who came out and stood up for Jack Eichel on Twitter and in a press conference saying that, look, teams need to listen to what players are saying about their own bodies. But this all, Greg, wound up being a story also about allegations of unauthorized distribution of painkillers to players by teams. So that is a lot. Please distill this for me. What's going on?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot here. Let's start with the Eichel and the Buffalo Sabres part of it. Jack Eichel has an injured neck. The Buffalo Sabres wanted him to get what is the commonplace surgery for this kind of injury, which is fusion surgery. Jack Eichel wanted to get artificial disc replacement surgery. Reason being is that fusion surgery could require an additional procedure down the line. Eichel believes, through the advice he's received from doctors and his representatives, that artificial disc replacement would make his post-hockey life a lot more comfortable. The Sabres' issue with him getting that surgery is that it's never been done on an NHL player before. So their thought is, we know about this commonplace surgery, you can get this, and then we can fulfill your trade request. It'll be a lot easier. So this process and this dispute has gone on, and it's gotten uglier. I mean, Eichel's former agents put out some contentious statements. The team, you called him a former captain, the Sabres stripped him of the captaincy because he obviously wasn't going to be playing for them this season. He switched to a new agent, Pratt Brisson, who is Sidney Crosby's agent, and I had a source joke with me recently that it's like hiring the NHL's second commissioner. That's how much sway Pat Brisson has within the sport. So the thought is that with Brisson involved, they're going to be able to smooth things over a little bit, at least find a path to getting Eichel out of Buffalo. Now, the other part of this, Pablo, is the fact that if teams do trade for Eichel, they do want conditions on some of the things they're sending to the Buffalo Sabres to acquire him. And that's part of the hang-up in the negotiations with some of these teams. The Eichel situation led to his former teammate, Robin Lehner of the Vegas Golden Knights, to issue a Saturday night Twitter thread that addressed the battle between the Sabres and Eichel, but that eventually got to accusations that NHL teams are pushing prescription medication on players without a prescription. And then he went on to accuse Flyers head coach Alain Vigneault of being, quote, a dinosaur and being a bully. This kind of got muddled up with the pill-pushing accusations, and Vigneault denied he ever did that, and then Lehner clarified that no, he wasn't saying Vigneault did that. And then Lehner had a press conference to say that the NHL and the NHLPA both reached out to him. The talks have been productive about trying to stem the problems with teams over-medicating their players, and that he's not going to really comment further publicly about this effort, preferring to work behind the scenes with the league and the players' union, but he clearly got their attention by making these public comments to begin with.
And the culture of hockey, Greg, I mean, look, I know this sport from afar as the sport where the playoffs end and suddenly it's like, hey, guess what? I've been playing with 50 broken ribs. Yes. So the idea here where a player is standing up for his own self-interest and his captaincy is getting stripped as a result and all of this controversy ensues, I do wonder how a locker room might feel as their interests seem to kind of be in conflict here.
There's a couple things here that are interesting in the way that the news has come out in the last few months. The first is that Robin Lehner specifically called out the National Hockey League Players Association in a way that they aren't usually called out by players when it comes to issues of player health. And I thought that was very productive and very telling that maybe the players are going to take a more activist role in trying to get their Players Association more involved when it comes to these conflicts. The other thing is that times have changed, and the idea that players have to play through anguish, whether it's physical or mental, is no longer something that we as hockey fans assume, especially when it comes to mental health. Robin Lehner is a good example. Like, he has been very candid about his struggles with bipolar disorder. There have been other players that have talked candidly about their own mental health. Carey Price, the goaltender from the Montreal Canadiens, just a few days before the start of the season, voluntarily entered the NHL and NHLPA's player assistance program, seeking help in a way that is very public and very high profile for a player. But the reaction from most fans was of support and of how great it is that times have changed where a player can feel comfortable seeking help when he needs it versus trying to push everything down and quote unquote play through it for the betterment of his team.
So as hockey tries to progress and modernize, Greg, the story around San Jose Sharks forward Evander Kane seems to be a giant mess of its own genre, really. What happens with Evander Kane going forward here?
Well, there's two ways to answer that, which is what happens with his contract with the San Jose Sharks and what could possibly happen next to this guy. I mean, it has been
so much
a soap opera this offseason for Evander Kane. Like you said, the gambling accusations, the league looked into the idea that he was throwing games, an accusation made by his estranged wife, Anna Kane, the domestic assault allegations, that investigation continues for the NHL. And obviously this new thing where he allegedly was using a fake vaccination card to get around the protocols with the league and his team. The Sharks did not have him in camp. He's still under contract with the team. There were reports during the offseason of some of his teammates being very dissatisfied with him and not wanting him to be part of the locker room anymore. You know, he can be a good player. I mean, he's been a guy that's been around 30 goals as far as pace with that team. So,
sure.
You know, much like any workplace, there are certain guys that hate him and certain guys that don't. But as far as his future with the team, it's completely cloudy. I mean, I think a lot of it's going to be tied into how these investigations with the NHL shake out. And then, you know, what the remedy could be potentially from the San Jose Sharks vis-a-vis the rest of his contract. Keep in mind, all of this is happening as Evander Kane is in ongoing bankruptcy litigation with debtors looking to recoup their money. And as part of that investigation, the idea of his San Jose Sharks contract being canceled has come up because of how much money he owes folks through the bankruptcy proceedings.
Wow. Okay. So if that story just keeps on building insane layers to it, what's a story, Greg, that you're looking at that lots of other people have kind of missed here?
The resurgence of the Chicago Blackhawks potentially this season is a real fascinating one. I think every sports fan knows that the Blackhawks have been a team to win multiple Stanley Cups within the last decade. There's a few things that have happened on and off the ice with this team that I think are pretty remarkable. Off the ice, it is a deplorable scandal in which There are accusations that an assistant coach sexually assaulted two players in 2010. That coach, obviously no longer with the franchise, has been involved with other scandals in his career to that end. On the ice, the team is markedly different than it was last season. Jonathan Toews missed the entirety of the 2020-21 season with what he said was chronic immune response syndrome. And he returns to the team to play this year. Now, he's a team captain, fantastic player, had put together two pretty good seasons before missing last year. So he's going to be a difference maker for them. But the biggest change, or the two biggest changes, came through players arriving in Chicago. One is Seth Jones, who was a star defenseman for the Columbus Blue Jackets. He's in the last year of his contract, was seeking to go someplace else and sign a long-term extension. So they traded him to Chicago, and he signed a multi-year extension with them to be a franchise-level defenseman. And then the biggest acquisition was Marc-Andre Fleury. Now, Marc-Andre Fleury is a name you probably know. Former goaltender for the Pittsburgh Penguins, the face of the franchise for the Vegas Golden Knights. They traded him to the Chicago Blackhawks in a trade that Fleury discovered had happened via Twitter. Never a good thing. There's a few days of whether he's going to play for them or not play for them, and decides to go ahead and suit up for the Blackhawks. And it's going to be interesting to see if these changes, plus Toews coming back, can return the Blackhawks to their cup contending levels that we saw for the last decade, or if this is just going to be a team that simply has its window closed.
So, Greg, at the end here, I mean, I am staggered, as always, by the degree to which you are a vault of hockey information. I have also learned on Twitter, though, that you might feel good about a pick for the Stanley Cup Finals.
All right, so I'm never right with these. And it's gotten to the point where fans that follow me on Twitter and read my stuff on ESPN ask me not to pick their team to win the cup.
It's a thing, Greg. This is a thing.
Yeah. But I can't help it, man. I look at the New York Islanders this year and I'm like, that's your cup champion. I really do.
Wow.
They made the conference final in consecutive seasons and lost to Tampa both times. They're just a stacked, talented team that plays a very, very strong defensive system in front of two good goaltenders. They need to find a few more goals in the playoffs, and if that happens, I think the first year in their new arena at Belmont Park could end with them hoisting the Stanley Cup over the ice a few steps away from the paddock area.
And wait, hold on. You're not telling the full story here, because also in the background of this same scene, I also see Greg Wyszynski and Mark Messier and Chris Chelios singing the NHL ESPN theme song a cappella.
I think it could definitely happen. I have a feeling that that song's going to be ringing around in my head a lot for the next 7 years.
Greg Wyszynski, thank you as always for making us smarter about the sport that you love.
Anytime, I appreciate it.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.